So the Data Protection Act, what are the key points of GDPR? First is protect the personal data of EU citizens and EEA citizens. Organizations must get consent for data processing, and data security is mandatory. So if you look at the entire GDPR guidelines, it would deal with, say, getting consent for data processing, how data security is enforced, what are the different security mechanisms, things like transferring the data, how securely is the data being transferred, are there encryption standards in place while transferring that data, is the personal identifiable information shared, if it is shared, then what kind of techniques are used. A very popular example is masking of data. When data is shared, say, across any communication method, the personal identifiable information, say, for example, a credit card number, right? So organizations would want to mask that credit card number, sharing only the last four digits for processing that data, ensuring that that particular data is secured with the right kind of encryption, so it's not available in clear text, etc. So these are some of the tools or frameworks that come under the data security mechanisms. Transparency in case of data practices is required. Data being shared with what kind of entities, with what consent, is something that the GDPR addresses. Individuals have rights regarding their data. So data access, rectification, or say erasing of that data. And GDPR has a broader scope and stricter requirements. As I said, stricter requirement for any kind of organizations doing business in EU, they have to have the GDPR compliance in place. What is the Data Protection Act? So the data protection best practices include not just a one-time fix, but because it's an ongoing process, so ensuring that the security controls are adequately in place, are getting monitored all the time, ensuring that the risk register is maintained so as to have the right kind of controls. So evaluate, implement, and continuously monitor is something that is part of the act. Data protection, as we said, is an ongoing process, not a one-time fix. Organizations should regularly review and update their data protection practices to adapt to evolving threats, say threats like new age phishing attacks, malware attacks, etc. So how those loopholes have to be plugged in is part of the Data Protection Act. Data minimization. Collect only the data that is relevant for the business purpose. Giving access to the data to people who have the specific purpose is again part of the data protection. Say for example, if I am, say, running a data model on particular business buying patterns in a credit card transaction, then I should be given access to only that particular information. So collecting first only the relevant data for the business purpose, and second, giving access to only individuals who have a specific interest in that data is something that is to be looked at. Data retention policy. So how long should the data be stored, and different kinds of data. So just to give you an example, the banking regulations in India, they maintain that banks have to have a data retention policy for 7 years. Now, 7 years is because they feel that 7 years is good enough time for banks to look at the customer data, retain their data, and if there are any fraudulent transactions in the 7 years, those archives could be then regenerated and the important records can be retrieved. So data retention policy, a clear time frame for how long you should store the data is something which is part of the data protection. Data classification. So classifying the data depending upon the sensitivity. So these are basically four different types. One is internal data, public data, there is confidential data, and there is a restricted data. So these are the four types of data. Depending upon these kind of data classification, the internal controls are then designed. So by default, every data is categorized as the restricted category. Public data is something that could be shared. Internal data is something that is kept only with the internal stakeholders. And then there is confidential data, which could not be shared with anyone, apart from the few business users who are entitled to look at that particular data. So data classification is one of the important considerations as well. Employee training. So quite often you see, say, employees not understanding the importance of data confidentiality. So having regular training programs, awareness programs on data security and best practices, you know, is something which is again part of the data protection. Let us look at the Federal Information Security, or the FISMA Act. So Federal Information Security Management Act of 2002, and the NIST standards. So the National Information Institute of Standards Technology. What are the different contributions of NIST to the FISMA Act? So the FISMA, or the Federal Information Security Management Act, is a United States legislation enacted in 2002. It aimed at strengthening the cybersecurity practices among the federal agencies to ensure the protection of federal information systems, protecting the data against the cyber crimes. So in 2014, FISMA was significantly amended by the Federal Information Security Modernization Act. Now this aimed to provide modernization against some of the new age cyber attacks. So we spoke about the attacks like APT, the Advanced Persistent Threats, the Advanced Bot Attacks, the Advanced Malware Attacks, and so on. So FISMA in 2014, when the amendment came, this looked at plugging some of the loopholes as far as the new age attacks was concerned. So FISMA, along with the Modernization Act, plays a crucial role in safeguarding the sensitive government information and enhancing the overall cybersecurity for the government data. The focus is on risk management, a more comprehensive approach to cybersecurity, as I said, to protect against the new age attack, and increased focus on information sharing. So what kind of information to be shared between the different government agencies, what were some of the cyber threats, and how it has to be mitigated was part of the modernization in 2014. So what does NIST have a role to play in the FISMA Act? So NIST is nothing but the standard National Institute of Standards Technologies, right? So NIST is an organization that defines many technologies. So say when we talk about cloud, NIST has a different definition for cloud computing, a different definition for software as a service, platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, right? And NIST is considered as a top body, a top institute for standards. So NIST also had an important role to play in the FISMA compliance. Although FISMA itself is a law and not a set of specific regulation, let us look at how NIST contributes to this particular act. So NIST develops and publishes cybersecurity standards because it's the standard body, and special publications that provide guidance for agencies and contractors to implement the regulations. It includes frameworks for improving critical infrastructure cybersecurity. So, as this particular NIST is a standards body, it studies the different frameworks for infrastructure and then makes recommendations for implementing those to ensure tighter cybersecurity. NIST collaborates with the various government agencies and industry stakeholders to develop and update its cybersecurity standards and resources to ensure that the right amount of security controls are maintained to combat the new age cyber threats. NIST also offers a comprehensive training programs and workshops to ensure that the standards are complied with. So let us now shift our focus to the most important act according to me, that is the Information Security Act, the Information Technology Act of 2000. The most important way I say is this act encompasses most of all the security acts, and this was found in India, which has some of the most strictest data protection guidelines. So the Information Technology Act of 2000, the IT Act, lays the foundation for data protection in India. Stricter rules for banks, financial institutions, insurers, manufacturing companies, including this includes the provisions for sensitive personal data protection as well. So most of the things mentioned in the SOC Act or the GDPR regulation, most of the things are included in the Information Technology Act of 2000. The most popular is the DPDPA, that is the Digital Personal Data Protection Act of 2023. Now, recently enacted law establishes a comprehensive framework for data protection in India. So it's not fully operational till April 2024, but the DPDPA Act will set the foundation to have the strictest of the data controls. Now, why is this particular act in places? Because see, there were certain data privacy issues getting flaunted, say companies in the social networking space, say like Facebook, Instagram, which had most of the customer personal data. So personal data including not just the name, but behaviors, personal information like where they visit, where they stay, where they've gone on holidays. Having those kind of important information to have tighter and stricter controls around it was the need of the hour. Say important details shared on social platforms like WhatsApp. It was absolutely important. Hence the DPA Act of 2023. So the key practices under the Indian regulations included obviously the consent management. So whenever you sign up for any social networking platforms, you obtain, there is a customer consent that you have to give, saying obtaining clear and informed consent from individuals before collecting and processing personal data. So that is one of the important considerations under the Information Technology Act of 2000. Data localization. Certain categories of personal data has to be stored in India. Now, as I said, certain networking sites taking the data from the country outside the geographical boundaries was something that is not allowed. If you look at the regulatory body for banking in India, they regulate that the entire banking data has to be kept within India. So data localization is one of the important considerations in the DPDP Act. Significant exemptions are still being clarified, however, for banking customers, insurers, financial institutions, NBFCs, the data has to be kept within the geographical boundaries of the country. Security measures like what kind of security plans to be kept in place, say things like disaster recovery center, what kind of security rules like encryption, firewalling rules, cybersecurity rules to protect the personal data is again one of the important considerations in this. And data subject rights. So the DPDP Act grants individuals rights to access, rectify, erase, and restrict the processing of their personal data under circumstances. So similar to GDPR, this also has provisions for individuals to have control over their data. So the Information Technology Act of 2000 has several key objectives which aimed at regularizing the digital landscape and promoting secure electronic transactions. The Act also got amended in 2014, and we will look at some of the amendments under this as well. The objective of the Act was to legal recognition for e-commerce. Now, what happened is because India opened the doors to many social platforms and e-commerce companies, the legal recognition for e-commerce included granting legal validity to electronic transactions, contracts, and records, allowed businesses and individuals to conduct transactions online with confidence, knowing that they have legal recourse if needed. So things like trading on the stock exchanges, doing internet banking transactions in a secure fashion was one of the legal considerations. Regulation of cybercrime. So the Act also defined and outlined the punishment for various cybercrimes like data leakage, data theft, cybercrimes. This helped to deter criminal activities in digital spaces. However, with the kind of advance attacks that keep happening and fraudulent activities keep happening, still the end user has to be vigilant in terms of the online behavior. So when I say online behavior is the transactions that he does, what kind of password policies, not clicking on unsafe links, etc. So that comes under the internet behavior, but that is still kept with the end user and it has to be adhered to because although there are stricter rules for punishments for cyber criminals, but the ownership is still with the end user. The electronic signatures and the secure transactions. So the IT Act recognizes electronic signatures as a valid method for authentication and signing of documents electronically. So say for example, opening bank accounts without the need for physically visiting a branch or physically submitting the documents. How this happens is through electronic signatures. So there is Aadhaar-based validation where you could do your electronic KYC. So that comes under the electronic signatures. This facilitates secure online transactions and eliminates the need for physical signatures, as we discussed. The data security and privacy. So while the IT Act doesn't have a comprehensive data protection framework, it lays the foundation for securing personal data through provisions like reasonable security practices, data breach reporting requirements, broadening the case for scope of cybercrimes. So if there is, say, a breach, then the organizations have to report it within 24 hours as soon as possible. So that is something which is in the IT Act of 2000. Promoting e-governance. So the IT Act encourages the use of electronic means for filing government documents, permits, official purposes. This improves the efficiency and accessibility in government services, facilitating digital infrastructure. So the Act aims at creating a legal framework that fosters the development of a robust digital infrastructure, encouraging innovation and growth in the IT sector. As I said, this has been amended multiple times. The amendments have been addressed evolving continuous technological advancements and introduced new regulations to address the ever-changing threat landscape. So let us look at some of the amendments. So the Information Amendment of 2008, this broadened the scope of cybercrime. So introduced things like data breach requirements. As I said, whenever there is a data breach, the IT Act, it mentions that it has to be reported immediately. This has huge repercussions for banks, financial institutions, because they have customer important data, things like credit card information, financial transactions, personally identifiable information, etc. So if there is a data breach, then it has to be reported. Things like electronic signatures for various purposes. So we just gave an example. So if you have to open, say, a Demat account or a trading account, you can still do it electronically now. There's no need to visit the physical office. In fact, there are certain companies, so say for example, multiple companies like Zerodha, Upstock, etc. These companies provide you electronic platforms for doing online trading. So there is no physical trail involved, but everything is signed electronically. An important thing was in 2016 was Aadhaar, right? So targeted the delivery of a unique biometric system. So you could do an Aadhaar-based eKYC for authentication purpose. And this is now recognized throughout. So if you have to apply for a passport or driver's license or in a bank or in any financial institutions, the link of the unique identification number, that is the Aadhaar in India, is a foundation. And this came into effect in 2016. The amendment of 2018, so this amendment introduced provisions for data protection and established the DPA Act. As I said, it's still not being formalized, but it laid the foundation for the Data Protection Act. So overall, the Information Technology Act of 2000 plays a crucial role in legitimizing electronic e-commerce transactions, having tighter cybercrime and security controls in the digital space, promoting e-commerce initiatives, facilitating the growth of IT sector in India. And the Act continues to evolve alongside the rapidly changing digital landscape, aiming to strike a balance between the technology progress and ensuring that privacy and security are kept at it. So the original Act had 94 sections and 13 chapters, right? But it's not possible to cover each of them in this particular course. So we'll look at some of the highlights, right? So Chapter 2 allows the subscribers to authenticate electronic records using digital signatures. So we spoke about Aadhaar-based eKYC for verification of the electronic records. Chapter 3 talks about addressing electronic governance, including legal recognition of electronic records and digital signatures, their use in government agencies, and the retention of electronic records. Chapter 4 talks about covers of attribution acknowledgement and dispatch of the electronic records. Chapter 5 deals with secured electronic records, secure digital signatures, and security procedures. Chapter 6 talks about establishing the regulation of certifying authorities, including, say, the certifying digital signatures, and what is their role in that, how secure, what are the different forms of governing laws to ensure that the digital signatures have the right amount of authority to grant access to the documents. Chapter 7 talks about a scheme for digital signatures, certificates covering their issuance, suspension, revocation, as well as the duties of the subscribers. Chapter 9 discusses the penalties for various offenses, including the damage to computer systems, with the right amount of penalties as detected by the adjudicating officers. Chapter 10 talks about the cyber regulations, the appellate tribunal as the appellate body for appeals against the orders passed by the adjudicating officers. The other chapter 11 talks about addressing various offenses to be investigated by the police officers not below the rank of deputy superintendent of police. Now, this is important. Any kind of cyber crimes. So there is a cyber cell which is which has the power to power and the right amount of skill set to look at say any kind of cyber offenses, including tampering with computer source documents, publishing say obscene information electronically on the internet, and so on. So overall, the IT Act of 2000, as I said, lays the foundation for any kind of data transactions in India. It encompasses most of the rules set by the GDPR, and it's very powerful for banks, organizations doing business in India. So, just to summarize, we looked at the reasons why the particular acts have to are in place right now. So, most of the scams earlier that took place, so like Tyco International, Enron, etc., which shattered the customer confidence and led to significant losses. That was the reason why the acts came into picture. We looked at the SOC acts or the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, which aimed at restoring public confidence. The SOC Act maintains stricter standards for publicly traded companies and has a particular focus in terms of financial reporting, executive accountability, and internal controls. We also looked at GLBA, how it altered regulations for banks, investment firms, and insurance companies, allowing them to merge under a single roof with the holding companies and offer various financial services under one entity. GLBA Act also looked at ensuring the privacy of the customer information. In fact, that was one of the primary objectives. Protecting the secure and confidential nature of the customer information, and also safeguarding against the unauthorized access that could cause any inconvenience to the customers. We further looked at the GDPR regulation, which protects the data for the EU citizens, and how organizations must obtain consent before data processing. And most importantly, we then spent our time looking at the Information Technology Act of 2000 in India, which lays the foundation for data protection, including digital signatures, electronic records, etc. So with this, we call this end to this particular section. I hope this has been informative to you. You had a good perspective of the different acts globally and locally. and how these acts help to protect the important customer information and thereby restore the customer confidence in the organizations. So I hope this has been informative to you, and I'd like to thank you for viewing.